Blog Talk Radio.
All right, this is V-Spot, and we are on the air. I'm Dr. Vic Tater, and with me is my associate, Neil Foster.
Hello.
Oh, God damn it. Don't subject our listeners to what I have to be subjected to every day.
Imagine I've been, feels like I've been fighting stuff for about 2 months now. It feels like
Well, it'll make the holidays easier for you. Now, Neil, Always Sunny came back last night.
That we didn't see until now, tonight.
Well, they moved Always Sunny to some third-tier channel called FXX. I get the feeling the Always Sunny cast is not happy about it if they're trying to be good sports. But we couldn't find it, so, you know, you have to use the other ways. I mean, a friend that has the channel just recorded on VHS and sent it over to us.
What's the idea? Now, like, you know, you forced our hand. But if we can't get the channel, we need to watch it somehow.
Now, Neil, what was the episode about?
Well, should we just give the title?
Basically, Dee's lost the will to live. It seems that she's lost the will to live. Again, it's hard to tell. And she becomes a successful stand-up comedian.
She's one of those, what do they call it? Got the term.
What's that?
Not quite somewhat self-deprecating, but that's not the word.
What's the name of that guy? Stephen Wright.
How terrible of a person she is.
It was kind of like Stephen Wright.
Stephen Wright has a different one in terms of it.
Well, no, the initial one, until she got to the sound effects, it just became its own thing. The last episode of Futurama was also last night. Neil, did you ever finish watching that?
No.
Why'd you not finish? Neil. Well, that's okay. Neil doesn't watch a lot of TV. A lot of his time has been drawing.
Stop lying to them.
I mean, you lied to me. I don't see the problem. Okay, I am going to be speaking to Wolfie D in a few minutes. He had to take off somewhere. But he said he'll be calling in about 15 minutes into the show. So right now I'm just kind of bullshitting with the deal. We'll probably be doing a video game show soon for the Mario games, because we've been kind of marathoning on playing different ones. I finally beat Yoshi's Island.
I can't remember when you first started that game, and then we had to stop.
I played it in 87, that would be cool, though. No, I played it back in 2007 on my old computer, and I guess I got distracted or something. I can't. Those were hectic times. Now it's kind of depressing, but it's not so hectic. And mind you, also
that
Game Boy
Advance card and that Game Boy Advance.
I don't know where that went. Yeah, I don't even know where that. I have no idea where that went. I still think one of the kids lost it. Good thing about having kids, you can use them as scapegoats. Yeah, you never have to take responsibility for losing anything.
It's obviously not the proper gate to species.
Yeah, so it's like that. It's like, damn it, Kevin! But I start playing it, and hopefully we'll be able to get around to the Mario show, and we might do a Ninja Gaiden or Beat 'em Up episode.
Classic
Beat 'em Up game. No, we haven't done another one of those. Oh, God, Neil, keep this phone away before you do that. We're already unprofessional enough. I mean, I had to go receive a package yesterday when I was talking on the phone yesterday. The King of Cartoons. Why don't we check in with one of our sponsors?
Oh my god, that's a giraffe!
Sir, you can't keep that giraffe here.
Hey, it's not my giraffe!
Coming this fall, Bill White comes back from vacation and finds a surprise. A talking giraffe is now living in his backyard.
Hey, you're a giraffe. You can't stay here.
What if I split the utilities? And even though Bill does not want the giraffe, doesn't mean he's not wanted by others.
I can kill that giraffe for you.
No, you can't.
Sure I can. I got all my permits right here.
No, I mean, I won't let you.
But you said it wasn't your giraffe.
It's not.
And what happens when Bill's girlfriend meets Greg the giraffe?
I simply cannot stand that smelly animal staying here.
Hey, that's not fair. Bill lives here. Look out, because Greg is not the only party animal.
Greg, tell that chimp to get out of my tree.
But he's not my chimp.
Where are all the white women at?
That's my giraffe, this fall on NBC.
Hey, who brought the kangaroo?
Oi, where are the white women at?
I can't tell if the sitcoms are getting worse or better.
We can intend to record more of these. My microphone, something happened with one of the programs, and now it's just not accepting the microphone.
Do we have
and I'm not sure. We checked the microphone on the MP3 player, and it worked. We never sent it to your house to check on your computer. And I'm at the point with this laptop, I'm not pouring another dime into this thing. You know, I mean, I'm already in debt up to my ears because of it. You know, so I have no intention of trying to put any more money to figure out. Though we do need to find that out because we still have other things to record. We have a new series of sketches recorded, but someone never finished the actual 2-minute sketch that they were supposed to do. And by sketch, I mean actual drawing and coloring. Yes, I'm good. Yes, Bill, you're right for parody. I'm trying to think of some things that are due out soon in, like, movies or anything, but it just feels like a very dry period.
Well, this is that period after the summer ends, and basically we're just waiting for anything to come around until they basically go in any Oscar bait onto the theaters.
Yeah, well, I didn't give a shit about the things that were out this year. Like, I had no interest in seeing Man of Steel, and then when I heard about the crap they pulled in Iron Man 3 with the beta switch, and I mean, and people said, and it's like, good for you, go see it. I'm not.
Want to talk about Mega Man?
No, I said Mandarin. Oh, the Mighty Number 9. That was a new Kickstarter that went up.
Yeah.
The creator of Mega Man is making a brand new game, and he's taking his Kickstarter to get it funded. And he reached his goal in like 2 days.
Less than 2 days. Basically about
right
32 hours.
Yeah, so he's working on it
already
now.
Passed about 3 of the stretch goals already.
Yeah, how many are left?
Well, they got the ones about the making up documentary and the whole porting to consoles, and then after that, they'll just whatever.
Now, have they shown any of the bad guys yet?
They've shown a little update where they have one of the bosses, which is basically they're showing all the different designs they went through until they finalized it's going to be take like a military weapon bot that has a whole bunch of different weapons on it, like missile launchers, a rail gun, and all that. I had to find pictures.
Yeah, who's the main bad guy going to be?
We don't know yet. They're probably going to have like a bad boss scientist, but they don't know which design they're going to finalize with.
Dr. Cryley. Yeah, but he has a full head of hair. It's totally different.
I want to make Mega Man. Sorry, sir. We can't get Mega Man. Then get his non-union Mexican equivalent.
Mighty Number 9. Or what's the number 9 in Spanish?
You know what I forgot? Hold on, Cinco Ocho. I think it's Nuevo. I could be wrong.
Number Nuevo.
I can't remember how he sings in Spanish either.
Yeah, I mean, he'll be in a few minutes, so we can get started. Because I don't really have any material.
Actually, come to think of it, that actually kind of makes sense, the name Mighty Number 9. Because one of the names they were kicking around for Mega Man back when they were coming up with the name, he was going to be called Mighty Kid.
Okay, he's back, Dill.
All right.
Hello.
Yo.
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
We're all right. Me and Dill were just bombing before you got back.
Good deal.
Just going through the news first. So lots of things in the news today.
What's in the news today?
Just a joke. We were just talking about video games and stuff. There was like a video game Kickstarter.
I got you.
Now, the last time we were talking, we didn't really get to your time in WCW, because after you left the WWF and ECW, you were kind of still up at the Tennessee Independent, working Music City.
We went to WCW for just a little bit, doing a lot of, I can't remember the names of the shows. We did a few Nitros, but we did Thunder and whatever that other one was. I can't remember the name of it, but did quite a few of those and, worked with Three Count a lot and the Jung Dragons and stuff like that.
One of your first matches, I think your first appearance on Nitro, you ambushed the Varsity Club.
Yeah, some of that I don't even remember. It's funny. I remember, and then we worked, I know we worked Steiner and Alex Wright on something for, I think that was in Houston, where we wore our Titans jersey and got some cheap heat that way, because when the Titans had just moved to Nashville, and did a little rap about that.
Yeah, I remember that. Y'all were really good. You worked a handicap match with Diamond Dallas Page. And y'all got beat. Did it bother you to lose the handicap match like that, or did it not necessarily bother, or did it worry you that you were losing a handicap match on TV?
Nah, man. Especially with that gimmick, man. We lost a number of matches. In Memphis we were the team, and we won a lot of matches. But when we would go to the national level and stuff, they kind of saw the gimmick as just that, kind of gimmicky, and we were good. Good at what we did, and to me, if you're good, you can keep yourself over. I don't care how many times you get beat. It's all about your character and everything, and I think we have good enough character where, people still remember it. One of the greatest, I'm not going to say greatest, but in my mind it was pretty good, but one of the most talked about squash matches that I know of is the one where we got killed by the Road Warriors. People always want to talk about that and how good it was. And it was nothing but a squash match. But we put our shit in there. We put our flavor on it. We got our characters over. And it made people remember it. It was we went out there and did the best job that we could do.
Now, I was watching one of the matches when you took on Rick Steiner, and I think you were taking on Rotunda, too. And they seemed, it looked like they were really roughing you up. Was it tougher than any other match, or did it just look that way?
Nah, it was nothing I ain't never had before. I mean, hell, I've been in the ring with Perry Saturn when he was fresh out of Japan. So after that, everything else is pretty much gravy.
Now, eventually, it seemed like that you guys stopped working on Mondays, and you were pretty much, like you said, on the syndicated shows and Saturday night. Do you know why that happened? Was it because Vince Russo was taken out of power?
I'm not really sure. The knock on us back in those days was, the too small thing. And plus, we had a reputation by that time as, partying too much. And, Jamie's attitude didn't help much. And, it is a number of things. But, it is what it is. We went out there and had great matches on what they gave us. I'm not sure if it was your show. Like I said, I've done a lot of these lately, but I was talking about a match that I remember. It can be YouTubed, I believe. It was PG-13 and Frog against the Jung Dragons. And, man, we had a hell of a match with them, an incredible three-way sunset flip pin finish. And when we came back through the curtain, man, there was people like DDP, Arn Anderson, and the whole crew stood up and gave us a standing ovation when we walked back through the curtain. So to me, you know, that's the type of stuff that means a lot to me. I really don't give a shit whether what show it was on and, you know, who beat me or whatever. You know, I know that I went out there and I did a really good job at what I was told to do. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I don't know what's happening. I'm getting things just something on my end. Yeah, I understand. I tell you, you guys were, because I remember when I was watching the TV then, y'all were always the highlight of Saturday night. I remember a match y'all had with the Mamalukes for the WCW tag titles. That was a really good match.
Yeah, like I said, we had a number of good matches, man. That's one thing about Jamie and I. We had great chemistry, and we were good. And regardless of, like I said, what show it was on, who we were working, we usually went out there and did our thing. And, you know, that's the sign of a good team, you know. It didn't matter if we were getting beat. We had good matches with pretty much everybody.
Now, what brought about the end to your run in WCW? Was it just the financial problems they were having at the time?
Yeah, that, and like I said, there was some, you know, with me and him, we were our own worst enemy at certain times, and we probably didn't do ourselves any favors there, you know, a few behind-the-scenes things. But, yeah, I don't think they had any real direction for us. We weren't in. At that time, there was a huge click there, and we just really weren't in the click. Me and Jamie just did what the fuck we wanted, and, you know, I'm not knocking anybody, but I've never been the type to kiss ass and hang out with people just because they're in the clique and, you know, all that bullshit. Any job I've ever gotten, I got it based on my talent, and I've got it, you know, a lot of times, like I said, people knew what they were getting when they booked us, and that means after the show, and that means Jamie's mouth, and that means all that. They knew what they were getting, but in spite of all that, we still got a good run. We still got a lot of work, and we went a lot of places in spite of all that. And, you know, to a certain degree, that says a lot about our in-ring work.
Yeah. Now, if I can go back a little bit to Memphis, I was looking at some YouTube stuff, and you were the USWA middleweight champion. Was it you or Jamie that had the feud with Miss Texas over the middleweight belt?
It was him more. I think I wrestled her a couple of times, but it was more him. Yeah, because he had the belt before I did. Actually, I think it was Danny Davis had it first, then it went to Jamie, and then some kind of way I ended up with it for a moment. But yeah, that's been so long ago, I can barely remember all that.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, because I was figuring it was Jamie, because I can't quite see you getting beat up by a woman.
Well, I mean, you got to remember at that time, I was only like 19 years old, and I was a lot smaller than I am now. So, I mean, it was still doable. I mean, like I said, I know there's matches where we had tag team matches, say, with her and a dude, you know, against us and things like that. And I know I've been in the ring with her, but the singles-type deal was more her and Jamie.
Right. Can you tell me a little bit, when you're doing a long tag team match, when do you know when to do the hot tag or do the, you know, or basically to keep the heat on? Is it something you just have to learn by instinct?
Yeah, I mean, depending on the situation, whether it's a TV, whether it's a house show, things like that, there's, you know, it's kind of a lost art, the term work. A lot of people have lost what that really means even, but it's just called working, man, and you just know, you just feel it, and you know when it's right.
Yeah, so have you ever had a match where you were planning on doing longer, and pardon me if this is the wrong terminology because I'm not a wrestler, it was, you know, like you're getting heat on somebody, have you plan on doing it longer, but you feel like it's the right time, just let the guy get the tag? Have you ever changed up in the middle of a match?
Oh, ad-lib. I ad-lib all the time. That's the best way to do it because every crowd is different, and even if you work in front of the same crowd a lot of times, depending on what they've seen before your match or what they may see after, there's so much that is variables out there. And like I said, it's just kind of a lost art for guys that really know how to feel it out there and do what – you don't necessarily want to give them everything they want, but you got to give them what they're asking for that they kind of don't know that they're asking for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you don't give people what they think they want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. Now, when did you decide to break off the team with Jamie?
After the WCW run, it was just kind of, I don't know, it had just run its course, and that's kind of when I came up with the Slash deal. I was actually, right before we ended WCW, I was in a really bad car wreck where I wasn't driving. I was in an SUV, and I was asleep in the back, and the guy fell asleep and went off the road. Off the side of the interstate, we hit a tree, and we rolled, flipped the car sideways like four times, and I got shot out the side window. And I was pretty banged up from that, and I don't know. I'm not saying that the wreck caused me to change my gimmick, but I don't know. It made me think about some things, and then the WCW thing ended right about there, and then that's when I started converting over to Slash, and it really worked because the whole, you know, in the car wreck, I suffered a huge gash on my arm, and I tore my bicep, and then just being beat to death from being thrown around in the car and thrown out of the car. And so the whole Slash thing, you know, with the white eye and the cut through the eye and all that, actually a ton of people, fans and some of the wrestlers included, actually bought the scar looked so real that I put on my eye, they really thought that that was part of the car wreck. So there was a little bit of reality to that to kind of help that along. And, you know, that's just kind of how I came up with it.
If you don't mind me asking about the car wreck, when the wreck actually happened, did it wake you up, or did you wake up after it already happened?
No, I was, like, you know, in an SUV, how you can lay the back seats down and, you know, have a huge area to lay down there. So I was just sprawled out in the back, and I was asleep, and the first thing I remember is my head bouncing up and down on the, you know, the surface there of where I was laying, you know, kind of hard. It wasn't cushioned or anything, so my head just started bouncing. And I sat up and I turned around, which would have been looking straight through the windshield. I sat up and turned around, and all I remember seeing was trees, and I just heard a loud bang. And then I had the feeling that I was going down a slide. And the next thing I know, I woke up in a ditch. The car was about probably 50 feet from me, and my arm was bleeding like crazy. It was raining. It was wet, and I was laid in the ditch, and I tried to get up and walk up the little embankment there to where the interstate was. And for some reason, I didn't suffer a leg injury, but my leg just hurt so bad that I couldn't really stand on it. So I just laid back down on the side of the interstate. And, I mean, I was knocked out because when I woke up, there was already cars stopped. So, you know, some time had passed right there. So, like I said, I laid down, and then some people came. And then the wreck happened about 40 miles outside of Memphis. And so the ambulance had to come from Memphis, so it was like 40 miles, so it took the ambulance a minute to get there, and they put me on the deal. And here's the funniest part, funny, I guess, if there's funny in this, is that, you know, they put me in the ambulance, and we start going back to Memphis, you know, another 40, 60 miles to the hospital. The ambulance that I was in broke down. So they pull over, and then I have to wait for another ambulance to come from Memphis to unload me and put me in that one and drive me back. And this wreck happened at about like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was right after Power Pro TV that morning. And they left me on a board, I mean, for hours. They didn't even sew my arm up until about 9 o'clock that night. And my bicep had gotten ripped also, like the outer head got ripped. And I had my arm was all knotted up, and I'm telling the, I don't know, doctor guy or whatever, I'm like, something's wrong with my arm, man. You know, what's going on here? Oh, it's just a contusion. I'm like, no, it's not a contusion, man, you know. And come to find out, the outer head of my bicep had been ripped, and they didn't even acknowledge that. But anyway, they finally sewed my arm up at like 9 o'clock at night and then sent me home, man. And the other two people ended up spending the night. Well, actually, the guy that was driving spent more than the night. The turn signal poked him in the gut and like lacerated his liver, and so he ended up staying for a while.
Yeah, was it hard to? Because I was in a car wreck once back in like '99, and I know I wasn't even hurt as bad. You know, besides just getting my eye blacked. Was it difficult to drive again after that?
No, but I will never, ever, and I didn't a lot then, but I never will go to sleep on another person driving ever again. I just can't do it. Unless it's somebody I've rode with a bazillion times that I know is good to go. You know, there's been a number of times, especially lately working for TCW, I end up doing a show up this way on a Friday night and then leaving straight from there and driving all night long to get to, you know, Fort Smith or somewhere like that that's like 8-10 hours from here. So I usually just tell whoever's with me, just look, just go to sleep, I'll drive. And I'm, you know, I've always been pretty good trooper when it comes to driving and stuff. So I just prefer to drive myself, basically.
Yeah, I understand. When you were hurt that bad, because you said, like, an extended time, you're a wrestler, you know, and you were working for the WWF or WCW, how did you survive during that period?
How did I survive? Re-ask me that, because I'm not sure what you're asking.
When you're hurt, like, when you're a wrestler that's not working for a major promotion, and yeah, how do you get by when you're hurt and you can't wrestle?
Man, you just got to tough it out, man. There's been so many times where... You know, I've been pretty lucky to have nothing super serious. I mean, I've dislocated both shoulders. One of them just recently, I've dislocated my left shoulder in a match with, it was TCW match with Mr. Saturday Night and Buku Dao. We had a match with them, and Saturday Night fell on my arm and ripped it out of socket, and I immediately just pulled it back in and kept going. And I actually had another match after that, and it actually wasn't hurting me. I mean, it hurt when it happened, but then afterwards it wasn't hurting that bad. But then, you know, still to today, I mean, I went to the gym and did shoulders today, and I've lost a lot of strength in it, and it gives me a lot of problems. So yeah, both my shoulders have been messed up. I've fractured a vertebrae, both my knees and my ankle, and then just all the other little bumps and bruises and all that kind of stuff. But man, you just got to fight through it sometimes. Lots of sprains, you know. It's funny because I see a lot of these guys on the independent stuff now, and, you know, they don't really have to work as much as we did, you know, as far as going 6 days a week. And it just wasn't an option, really. I mean, it's like if you sit out, you're going to lose your spot, first of all. And second of all, you know, if you're in a main event angle, you know, people don't want to hear that this person can't wrestle tonight, regardless of what the reason is. They paid their money, and it's not like you can call in sick to work like you can something else and have somebody cover your shift. It's not the same thing. And, you know, I mean, I've been out there before with – I remember a night where I had to wrestle – I wrestled Brian Christopher. I had the flu, and I actually wrestled the match in a hoodie because I was just freezing cold, and I had to keep the hoodie on. And I had another – when I messed my back up really bad, I went to the ring with a weight belt on, and I mean, I couldn't even, I got through the match, but I couldn't go down, because if I'd have went down, I probably wouldn't have got back up. So, you know, I'm taking, you know, punches and bouncing myself off the second rope instead of going down. So yeah, you just got to fight through it, man. It's like old school, you know. It's kind of like, even,
can you tell me about when you, because you were a part of the first generation of TNA wrestlers back when Jerry Jarrett started it.
Yeah.
How were you recruited?
Jeff, me and Jeff. Jeff gave, you know, I think I told you the story of Jerry Jarrett and Jeff giving me and Jamie our break in USWA.
Right.
And, you know, Jeff has always been pretty cool with me, and I knew he was starting something up. He wanted me to do a little bit of graphic work for him at first, when he first had the idea and things like that, before it ever got started. So I knew it was coming, and, you know, we'd been in contact, and then they just, you know, booked me on the first show. I don't think there was any real plans for me at that point, but then when they put me with Brian Lee and James Mitchell and all that, then it just kind of clicked and it worked, so they kept it going.
Okay, can you tell me, tell me about the average taping of the Wednesday pay-per-view? How much time did they, how much planning do you think they did in advance for these shows?
I think it was a good planning. I mean, I liked it back then. You know, it was the same as a normal TV taping for anybody else. You know, be there about 1 o'clock and get all your pre-tapes done and figure out what the hell's going on and go do it. You know, I mean, I thought it was pretty well planned out. I mean, that, you know, there, it went through that little stage where, you know, everybody talks about Vince Russo and blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, yeah, there was a part of it, and there was a whole bunch they did that I didn't agree with and I didn't like, but you know what, that's not my fucking job. My job is to go out there and do what
right.
They tell me, and you know, it is what it is, man. I don't think I've ever worked for a company that does everything that I think is right. Not that I'm a fucking genius, but you know, I do have a good idea of what works and what don't. But you know, it's frustrating sometimes when they won't listen to you, but in the end, it's somebody else's company, it's somebody else's money, and they're paying you to do a job, and you got to do what they ask you to do.
Right, it's like, you know, it's your money, you know. You don't want to make somebody do it, so it's like, it's your money. If you want to lose it, it's your business. No, I was just asking because, you know, the TNA ideal, it's still, even today, it's a very unique ideal of doing a pay-per-view every week, you know, as a weekly TV show, because it seems like there's so many parts, because number one, you need to build up stories, storylines or angles, you know, but at the same time, you really have to give the person ordering that week their money's worth.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, you know, and but they, you know, it was like, what, $9, $10 or something, so... It was a little bit cheaper. It was a different concept, and, you know, it may not have done as well as they thought it was going to do, or I don't know. You know, that's, like I said, that's not my end of wrestling. I'm not a a money guy or a business owner. You know, I'm just a old school wrestler that goes out there and does what needs to be done.
A little bit into the run of the new church, the wrestler Malice, and I can't remember his real, his actual name, because he's the wall in WCW. Do you remember when he passed away?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I don't remember what the date was, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was 02 or 03.
Yeah, it was somewhere right around in there. I'm not for sure. I've had so many, you know, co-workers and friends die, you know, throughout the years. It's sometimes I even forget that some of them are gone, you know. I'm like, oh crap, he did die, didn't he? And it, not that I, you know, that it just, I don't know, it almost like you get numb to it, I guess, at some point. Thank goodness I've not really had anybody super super close to me pass away, but you know, some guys that I was cool with and, you know, hung out with, and then, you know, just some people I looked up to and things like that. So then a lot of them, man, it's just, it's hard to remember which ones passed and when, you know?
Yeah. I found that you guys, the new church, whenever, you know, you see these shows, you guys were really the best part of TNA those first years.
I appreciate that. I'm actually pretty proud of a lot of the stuff that, that I did there, match wise, and It was a fun time. I really enjoyed it. I thought they could have done more with it. There was a point where, you know, it was really over, and I thought there could have been some more stuff done with it. But, you know, then we got the old, we don't know what to do with you, shit. So, yeah, it was good stuff. There was a lot of good matches we had with a lot of different people, and, you know, as far as putting the match together, a lot of that stuff was, you know, I had a lot of input in that. So I'm proud of a lot of that stuff. I really enjoyed it.
Do you remember the match where it was you, Brian Lee, and Mike Awesome against Sandman, Perry Saturn, and I think New Jack?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that was that's one of my favorite TNA matches.
Yeah, those were good matches too, against the ECW guys, Raven, Sandman, a lot of that. Yeah, a lot of those were good. I think technically tag team matches were best when we worked with America's Most Wanted.
Yeah, definitely, because they were a really good team, you know. I mean, because there's a lot, those are weekly pay-per-views. I always find those very interesting to go back, because there's a lot, if you're willing to go through everything, you know, you can find some really good stuff in there.
Absolutely. There was some great stuff, man. A lot of that, the X-Division guys were out there tearing it up, and, you know, Jerry Lynn, Kid Cash, Amazing Red, Low Key, those guys were, you know, out there. And AJ, of course, you know, out there doing some amazing stuff, man. And then you had our stuff with the tag team and more of a kind of a brawling style with, you know, America's Most Wanted. And then, you know, then the ECW came in, and you had your heavyweight division for that title. And I mean, it was good. You even had I thought it was a good concept to have the cage dancers, you know, just, it was different, you know?
Yeah. If I could go back a little bit to Memphis, when you guys were, do you remember the first time they did the, because I think you and Jamie feuded a couple of times in USWA, didn't you?
Yeah, we,
or was it only one?
The first, I think it might have been more than once. The first time was terrible. And it's funny because the fans, like, the thing I noticed over the years with me and him is, like, anytime we do something like that, we were a tag team. People liked us together. And then when we would split up, it's like there was kind of something missing from both of us, you know? I wasn't as over by myself, and he wasn't as over by himself. But when we were together, it was that, you know, that chemistry that made it right, you know? So, yeah, that was kind of weird. You know, I mean, I had a good run a couple times by myself, but, you know, I don't know. It's just me and him together, I think, are what the people like more than just me and him.
They would break, whenever they break up tag teams, I'd like, you know, it's always frustrating because, you know, I'd want them as a I'd want the guys as a team.
Right.
And you're kind of just kind of looking at a watch saying, can this end now so they can go back to teaming again?
Say that
with
again?
Nothing against the wrestlers. You just like, it's like you're almost looking at a watch waiting for the feud to end so the tag team can come back.
All right.
You know, it's nothing against the talent involved, you know. You just prefer them as a team.
Yeah, just there's a reason why it was a good team, and it was the chemistry and that type of stuff. You can't be trained for. You can't just make it happen. It's something that just happens. You know, there's good teams.
Yeah.
Like I said, me and Jamie, man, we could get out there and I could just give him a look, and he knew exactly where I wanted to go with it or what I needed him to do. Or, you know, we didn't really have to talk a lot to each other out there.
When did you come up? Because eventually you kind of put Flash aside, and your current name, your Cerebus.
Yeah.
Right. How did that come about? The shift away from the Flash and the new Church gimmick.
Well, I kind of after 2004 when I left TNA, I quit the business for a little bit, and then when I came back, you know, I quit for about 3 years, 4 years, I believe, and then when I came back. Let's see, 2004, and then about 2008 is about when I started back again, I think. Or maybe it was, about 2008. And, you know, I just came back and using what I had left off the name of Wolfie D and, you know, just getting what I could off of that. And it just got really stale, and I just felt like, okay, I'm not making any kind of impact here, and I don't like that. You know, I like changing it up too, because I mean, just like any performer, I mean, look at like Madonna and all people like that. They reinvent themselves every once in a while, you know, to give it something fresh.
Yeah.
And with this, like an assassin deal, it's, you know, it's still playing off the Wolf. You know, that's my real last name. I've gone by Wolfie D. You know, it's a little bit of Slash too. And I don't know. I just came up with the idea, and I made the you know, the chest piece that I wear with the light on and stuff. I made that, and then it just all started coming to me. I'm a huge fan of I'm not so much a comic book reader, but I love comic book art and, you know,
yeah,
heroes and things like that. And this, you know, this gimmick is very you know, comic bookish, if you will. And I don't know, it just came to me, and I like the way it looks, and I've got a lot of great feedback there. That's what everybody says, man, that looks awesome. And you know, I'll be 40 years old in December, and you know, I'm in pretty much the best shape I've ever been in. So it kind of, this ain't a gimmick that I could be Wolfie D small and be able to pull off. So, you know, it's all timing, and it's working well for me right now.
You mentioned being out of the business for a couple of years. What brought about that, you deciding to quit?
Well, I was just kind of fed up. The way I left TNA was kind of shitty. And, you know, just, man, just kind of burned out and like, okay, what now? You know, what's left? I pretty much worked for every company there was, you know, and I'd gotten married and got a house. And I don't know, I'd just been like, you know, my daughter was younger and, you know, I was coaching her softball teams and things like that. And I don't know, it just, for once in my life, I was like, I didn't care about wrestling for a minute. And I, you know, when that happens, it's really hard to go out there night after night and take the falls and take the beatings and, you know, battle through the injuries if your heart's not in it, man. That's really hard. And there becomes a point when sometimes, you know, for guys like me, I'm just speaking for myself, really. When you've been to a certain level and then you get knocked back down to that low independent level, it's not fun. And showing up to the shows ain't fun. And there was so many times after that where I was like, you know, I was trying to talk myself out of going to the shows, you know, like it would be time to leave. And I would be like, I don't even want to go, you know, I just wanted to stay home. And so when that starts happening and your heart's not in it, you're not going to go out there and give it your all because your head's not in it, your heart's not in it. So what's the point then, you know?
Yeah, I understand that sometimes, you know, it's better to take a break and try to get your, you know, get your energy back or whatever. And if you can't get it back, just walk away.
Yep.
All right. Now, since you've been, what was it that motivated you to start wrestling again?
Man, for those 4 years, man, I mean, I let myself go. I didn't train. I didn't do nothing, you know. Really lazy. Probably drinking a little too much. And then I suddenly got this urge to just go back to the gym, and I got in really good shape again. Got really lean. I wasn't huge, but I was really lean and really good shape, running a lot and stuff like that. And then once I got back in shape, I was like, man, all right, I think I want to, you know, I want to do this again. And then I just did. I got back in. But like I said, I got back in and was trying to, you know, live off the Wolfie D PG-13 deal. And you know, people were happy to see me again at first, you know, but then it gets old, man. You can only see somebody look a certain way and have their matches, and you know what I mean? It just gets old after a minute. So
yeah.
Then I kind of got back into that rut of, oh, you know, I really don't even want to be doing this. I'm only doing it because I have to, because I need the money at that point. And, you know, I don't know, didn't just, you know, it's no secret that, you know, a couple of years ago I went to rehab and all that stuff. And when I came out of rehab, I felt really good and was in good shape. And that's when I started having the idea to do the House of Champions thing. And somehow when I started doing that, it just really got my juices flowing. And I don't know. I really don't know where I came up with this. I didn't come up with the Cerebus name. I'm not going to take credit for the name. TCW came up with that. But I had come up with the look, and I was still calling myself Wolfie D, but looking just like Cerebus. But, so I don't know where the look came from. It was just something I was like, this looks cool. I think I'm going to go with this. So I don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, and I think I told you this last time, I had no idea that was you when I first saw it. Because I remember I said, who's that guy? He looks cool. And I kind of, it's like Wolfie D. I was like, what? No shit.
Yeah, I've had quite a few people say things like that to me. People that knew me as well, you know. Most recently, when I went to do that TNA Hardcore Justice 2, and I went down there and I went up to Bubba Ray, who I obviously hadn't seen in years. And I went up to him. I was like, hey, man, what's up? And I was shaking his hand. He's just looking at me like I'm just some other guy. And I kept a hold of his hand and kept shaking it. And I'm like, it's fucking Wolfie, man. What's up? It's Wolfie. And he went, it just kept smiling and looking at me. And then all of a sudden it fucking hit him. And he's like, oh, shit, man. And he gave me a big hug. And he's like, God damn, you look crazy, man. You don't even look like the same dude. So, yeah, more than one person has told me that.
Wolfie, they're about to cut us off in a minute. Thank you again for doing the show. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem, man. Not a problem.
All right, you have a good day.
You too, bro.
All right, and for everyone else, we should have a show set up either Sunday or next week.